And some people, for example, Vladimir Putin, use it to their advantage. Not saying that Uli Hoeneß is Vladimir Putin,
You're construing these things just to get into the cold opener, aren't you?
Welcome again to the Super Bayern podcast. We've got the whole crew back this week. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I have with me Garrett Kerber.
Hello, everybody.
Tim Richards.
Hello.
And, of course, Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
With a Ballon d'Or winner announced earlier this week, we'll discuss whether or not Bayern should have been better represented in the award, and we'll work through some quotes from Hasan Salihamidzic yesterday. First, however, we need to talk about Bayern's 3-0 win over Nuremberg over the weekend. The Bavarians won thanks to a Robert Lewandowski brace and Franck Ribéry finally scoring his first Bundesliga goal since March. And on top of that, Bayern kept their first Bundesliga clean sheet since September. This was, however, against a struggling Nuremberg side. So with that in mind, to open up with a question, should this win be taken as a real positive sign for Niko Kovac, or was his opposition a bit too poor for this win to really mean anything?
For me, it was a big win and a good result because we've made some pretty bad teams look not so bad, and so you know, any step in the right direction, and if we can, you know, take a team like Nuremberg and not let them really in the game at any point, then I take that as a big step forward. Maybe if this was the beginning of the year, I would have thought otherwise and not really thought much about this game, but I'm pretty pleased with the performance given what we've seen over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think the confidence is back. I think that's a very important thing. I never had that feeling that we might at any point have to concede a goal or two or three or something like that. I never really quite felt like that, like we felt in earlier games this season, where the possibility was really always there. You could be two goals up, but you never knew what was going to happen, and I never felt like that. Also, there were really some things that I liked. Of course, we should not make too much of that. The real test will come probably against Ajax and in other games still to come before the break. But yeah, I think I liked a lot about what we saw in that game.
Yeah, I agree. It was the same sort of belief that Sebastian, you mentioned last week about the Bremen game. Sorry, I had a mind blank there. This wasn't a matter of, this looked like a Bayern that could win the treble. This was a team that, it was a performance that showed that Bayern can play football again. And, you know, maybe you do need to have a couple of games against, you know, a struggling Benfica or, you know, a slightly weaker Werder Bremen, just to, if anything, get the confidence back up. And this match showed that Bayern can play with confidence. There was great movement. I think everybody played well. I don't think anybody had a particularly bad game. This was a very good performance and a much needed performance.
Of course, Tim, you were at the game. And I was going to ask, did that confidence that you and Sebastian have both talked about, did that translate over into the fans? Was the mood inside the stadium, you know, really kind of like we were watching Bayern being Bayern again? Or was there still a bit of an air of uncertainty with the crowd and everything?
Yeah, the crowd was good. Like every time that I've been, so for those that don't know, I've got a season ticket for Bayern Munich, and until recently I would travel with my dad like every 2 weeks to go to the home games, but for one reason or another it's not been as possible recently. But when I've been, it's always been consistent. Energy is high, it's very loud, it's very cold. Not that anybody would really be too bothered about how that impacts anybody, but it made me feel very unhappy at times. It was good. It was a great atmosphere. Everybody was excited when they were doing the team at the beginning. I've got a note here, actually. When they were going through the team with is it Stefan Lehmann, who does the announcements in the stadium. He was going through, it's like Nummer 1, Manuel, everybody chants Neuer. And it was going on and on and on. It got to Kimmich right at the end. And 32, Joshua, Kimmich. And then there are a few echoes of fans chanting Fußball Gott, which I think may be like a bit of a... I don't know if it's actually going to take off or anything. But people were excited. And I realize it's not on the agenda today, but I did want to talk about that very briefly because it was a really cool moment to see somebody younger than me. It made me sad at one point because I was like, wow, this guy's quite a bit younger than me and is doing exactly what it is that I wanted to do. But that's fine. I'm happy for him. Seeing, I guess, like the mantle of Bayern Munich Fußball Gott be like, okay, it's not an official thing, but seeing fans chant it after somebody's name is really exciting. I don't know if anybody knows that Schweinsteiger wasn't the first person to be called that. So this goes back to like the early 2000s. So the first player that I recall ever being called a Fußball God was actually a former Bayern Munich centre forward Carsten Janker. And he was by no means the best player on the pitch. If anything, he's probably quite low down on that list. But it is really exciting to see a player that all of the fans can just really rally behind. But yeah, to answer the question, everybody seemed happy. Like, big chance for Kovac, big celebrations. It was good. It was a really great atmosphere.
I do not actually remember, but I kind of feel like with Carsten Janker, it was probably kind of tongue-in-cheek. So,
no, he was great. He was like my favorite player growing up.
I mean, he was not a bad player at all. But I would argue that if you call somebody Fußball God, that implies that he's really also technically a good player. At
and
least
you're saying he wasn't.
Yeah, I guess so.
He was. When I first started supporting Bayern, I was about 6 or 7, I think. I was a really small kid. And seeing this guy who was like 6'5", he was huge. Defenders were terrified of him. I was like, this is a guy that I want to look up to.
Literally.
You know, yeah, at that time, definitely. It was a very literal thing.
Well, since we're on the topic of Joshua Kimmich, the new Fußball Gott, he was back in midfield against Nuremberg together with Leon Goretzka once again. The whole entire starting 11, I think, was exactly the same that we saw the weekend before. I mean, Niko Kovac had talked about in his presser that he was really scrapping the rotation, throwing it out the window, and he wanted to stick with the starting 11, and that's what he did. Joshua Kimmich, to me, yesterday really stood out. For me, he was probably the man of the match, dominating the midfield. Leon Goretzka, of course, complimented him very well, as usual. But Kovac stuck with that, you know, non-rotation policy that he's started the season with. He's thrown it out the window. Do you think that's something he's going to continue with? Because we see Thiago's coming back from injury, and we still have Renato Sanchez, Javi Martinez on the bench. Corentin Tolisso is eventually going to come back. This is something that we've also, you know, been asked on Twitter. If you were Niko Kovac, after getting three really good results with this, you know, midfield pairing or trio, if you throw in Thomas Muller, would you stick with Kimmich and Goretzka in midfield? Or maybe start to work in other guys and move Kimmich back to right back?
I kind of feel like he might be going from one extreme to the other, which probably is also not the best thing he could do. I did like that he started Kimmich and Goretzka again, but I do feel like he needs to find a way to work in guys like Thiago. Even if it is only in case of somebody gets injured again, we need to find out, does Thiago, for example, work in this kind of double six? Does he work? Does he work with Kimmich? Does he work with Goretzka? Which combination can we also play? And I think we really need to find out what works and what doesn't work. And yeah, it would also not be advisable to always play the same 11. And I think the double six is just one small example of that. Of course, I would have liked to see less of Ribery again, but yeah, I guess that's that.
I would have. I think that the important thing is that it seems that the double six works. for Bayern. And I don't know necessarily that it has to be Kimmich and Goretzka every week, but Bayern is definitely stronger with two rather than just having one person do it. Kimmich seems really comfortable in that role of defensive midfield, and every once in a while pushing a little bit up, and other times it's Goretzka pushing forward a little bit more, and they kind of they work well together, and I think that is that's really the strength of that combination is they do play together in kind of that role a little bit with the German national team, and I think that just is, I don't know, further chemistry and everything I think is huge. I do think that they have to finish the season like this with Kimmich and Goretzka there, because I don't think that you can experiment at this point a whole lot. Maybe you could against Hanover and see where we go, but I don't know that you want to mess with the formula that's kind of been working a little bit better against Ajax or against Frankfurt or RB Leipzig. But although maybe you do experiment a little bit against Ajax because you know you're moving on, and yeah, you're looking at you know a worse matchup in the round of in the knockout rounds of the Champions League, but yeah, I think that it works really well there, and I think that if we have a problem where we think we have so many good players that we're trying to see how we're going to get them playing time, that's a much preferable problem to the problem of, okay, who in the world are we going to get to play this position? Because you know no one's working, so I'm happy to be talking about which works best rather than which is going to work at all, and so. Like I said, just finish the year with using Kimmich and Goretzka in that role. Maybe every once in a while you could rotate Kimmich to right back and put in somebody in his place in the midfield there. But I think that it's working so well right now. Don't break that just to see what works. I agree with you, Sebastian, though. If we can find ways to move Ribery away and maybe get Coman back in the lineup a little bit more frequently, then I'd be happy there. But that's not to say anything. He played really well against Nuremberg, and you know he deserves credit for that too. So, but yeah, that was kind of rambly, but that's where I'm at with that whole lineup and the non-rotation bit.
Well, you're right that putting Kimmich in midfield, we have the issue of. You know, we're not searching, you know, who can play this position. We're more so having to search to how we can limit it or how we can, you know, make everyone happy. But if you then look at right back, if Kimmich's in midfield, we do kind of have that dilemma there. Because Rafinha, for all, you know, everything he's done for the club, he can't be your starting right back week in, week out. Even if he was in his prime, that's not someone you want starting at right back week in, week out. So we do kind of run into that issue.
I think that's much more preferable than having that question in the midfield, because with right back you can scheme a little bit better to make that not as much of an issue. You can, you know, have guys stop going forward as much. You can have, you know, you but when if the issue is down the spine of that formation, I feel like that's a much more dire situation than being like, well, our right back is old and slow, and so if I have to choose, I'm gonna pick that poison in that particular case. But you're right. I mean, it just moves it at least. Well, it doesn't really get rid of the problem.
Yeah, and my argument would be like, we don't have to choose between having a good midfield or a good right back. I think moving Kimmich to right back allows you to have both. For example, looking at Thiago's stats from yesterday. He came in and played 27 minutes, and in those 27 minutes, he played 41 passes. 100% of those were accurate. Two of those were accurate long balls. He had a successful dribbling attempt. He had four duels. He won all four. Three tackles attempted, three tackles made. And he kind of just picked up right where he had left off from being so good earlier in the season. So my thing would be, why, you know, if I understand keeping Kimmich there, he's probably one of the most all-around talented players in the squad, and putting him in midfield is obviously going to bring out some strength. But I'd rather, you know, take a half step down and have Thiago than have that, you know, massive step down at right back between Kimmich and Rafinha.
I kind of disagree. I guess that's not such a huge surprise, because earlier in the season I argued for Javi Martinez over Thiago, and I think we're just going in circles if we say, okay, let's play Thiago there all the time. Yeah, it probably would have worked against Nuremberg, but I fear it won't work against better teams. When we are able to control the whole match, if we have 70% possession, yeah, I guess that can work if the opposition doesn't have players who specialize in quick counterattacks. Maybe that works, but I don't feel so great about that. I would really hope that we do something in winter about that. I mean, we probably can make it until the break with Rafinha on the right side, but it would really be great to have a little change there.
Yeah, I mean, and ideally I would probably say the same thing, because I do think we're looking at this point now that Kimmich's future is in midfield, and there's not really any way around that. That's where he prefers to play. He's excellent there. And so, yeah, I think ideally we buy a good right back in January. But then that also does create the issue of, we have a lot of midfielders who could play at the six and a double pivot, and what happens then?
And maybe you rotate there. I mean, if instead of, you know, Sebastian talked about going from one extreme to another with the rotation mm-hmm. policy, but I think that if you want to keep rotating between, you know, moving Kimmich into the midfield and then back to right back for certain games. I think that the big question would just be how well does Thiago work in that pairing with Goretzka or Kimmich? I mean, depending on how you want to do that. I would assume that we're not talking about moving Goretzka back there or necessarily even played Rafinha at right back while, you know, and then moving, doing a Kimmich and Thiago thing. I'm not really sure how I'd feel about that. I think that Kimmich can play with anybody, you know, Fußball God and all that. But but I think that, like I said, the Goretzka, I've been trying to get Goretzka in defensive midfield all year, because I think that, you know, we have talked about he doesn't really have a best spot at this point, but I really feel like that's going to be where his best spot is in that kind of defensive midfield role. He'll obviously get forward a little bit more because he's good offensively as well. But I think that he does so many things well in the defensive midfield that pairing him up, especially, and having that relationship where you can send a guy forward from that area and still have a guy back and they can kind of work off each other. I think that works brilliantly for Bayern. So I think that we have a nice little situation here that we can be arguing about whether Kimmich needs to play at right back more often. I think that it helps in the winter transfer window too. Maybe you don't feel like you have to go out and get a guy that's going to be there forever. You just feel like you have to get a guy who would be serviceable for the remainder of the year, possibly. And then that way, if you don't play him, that's fine. And if you do, then great. So maybe that makes the winter transfer window a little bit easier too.
Actually, I guess I would prefer a younger guy. I would prefer somebody who you're not 100% sure if he can do it, but maybe he can. I guess that would more what I would love in that kind of situation. And I think that might be possible in the winter, maybe. And what I also wanted to say is, it feels like we might have something special there with Kimmich and Goretzka. I'm not quite sure yet, but there were some moments that I really, really liked a lot. they managed, they somehow made it possible that both of them had their moments on offense, and it really worked quite seamlessly. And I think that was really great. And I would not like to just plug Thiago in there and that's that. And I don't think we could expect to get the same performance right now, right out of the box. Maybe work Thiago in there. Let's see if he can do some similar stuff. But yeah, I would not just expect him to pick up where the other guy leaves off.
Does Tim have a way of getting... Yeah, I was going to say, Tim, do you have a way of getting all of them on the field at the same time in the midfield?
I'm glad you asked. We were going to play a 1-7-2 formation.
Perfect. Perfect.
Would that even... All right, well, I know what I'm going to be doing once we finish recording. So earlier this year, when Germany were knocked out of the World Cup, I was thinking, all right, what exactly went wrong here? Because it wasn't as simple as Leroy Sané wasn't brought. Like, it was a matter of the defence was very attack-minded, which for defence, you kind of really don't really need that. And then in front of that was the midfield, who were also attack-minded. And so, but then the attack was focused on playing Timo Werner as if he was Miroslav Klose, which was just ridiculous. So I got a whiteboard and I was drawing things out and I was thinking, okay, what would have been the solution to this? And it was have a player that is not exactly Bastian Schweinsteiger, but somebody that will do anything. Somebody that, because Toni Kroos, I don't like Toni Kroos as a person, because I just wish that he stayed. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but...
No, it's not. His interviews during the World Cup were terrible. He was so arrogant.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
It was awful.
Okay, so I rightfully don't like him. But for as a footballer, he is undeniably talented at starting an attack and keeping the ball. He is not the sort of person that's going to help out the centre-backs. So when the ball's going forward, he's going to go forward. When it's coming back, he's going to stay where he is so he can get the ball, lay it off to Ronaldo or Bale or whoever it would have been back then. With somebody like Joshua Kimmich, you have a player that, you know, he's played as a centre-back, he's played as a full-back, he's played as a regular central midfielder, as a defensive midfielder. He hasn't shied away from any of those. And it's the same sort of player like Owen Hargreaves, who put him in the team sheet. He doesn't care where he is. He's just going to do exactly what it is that needs to be done. I think Kimmich is the most important person in Bayern's... Yeah, I'm going to say Bayern's squad, because he is a player that will come back and defend, which is ironic considering that was kind of his biggest drawback as a fullback. Mm-hmm. When he's in the middle, as a defensive midfielder, he doesn't have to go forward. So it's kind of like you sacrifice one thing for the other. You don't necessarily see that with many of the other midfielders. So Thiago, he can defend, but you wouldn't want him as your defensive midfielder getting stuck in. Like he will, because he cares a lot about the team, and that's fantastic to see. Goretzka, again, very good going forward. His defensive duties are kind of lacking a little bit. Not as much as other players, but he isn't quite as leveled out as Kimmich is. So for that reason, I think it is important to keep Kimmich in midfield, because you have the, just full-on aggression that somebody like Javi Martinez has, with the mobility of somebody like Thiago, a passing range of somebody like Thiago or James or anybody, and above all else, the tenacity of Bastian Schweinsteiger. We've got a perfect midfielder, and it would be a shame to see him not necessarily wasted at fullback, but not playing in the absolute best position that would be best for not only him, but also for the club.
When you think about, too, something that I've been meaning to bring up for a couple of weeks now is that Kimmich playing in the midfield and them putting Rafinha at right back, you're not expecting Rafinha to get forward and to lump in those crosses as much. You're okay a little bit more if he sits back a little bit and helps defensively on counters, and so in that regard, it's made Bayern a better defensive team to have Rafinha at right back in some ways, and so that's good. And like you said, Tim, if you think about when Schweinsteiger was in the club or in the squad, and then Xabi Alonso, they both did that. They were that link up between a defensive minded back line and a offensive minded midfield, and they could kind of fit in on either of those, and in different ways. Obviously, they were different players, but the whole mindset of we need that link up. We can't just say, okay, here's our defense, and they're going to get forward and play offense, and then, but when it comes to play defense, they're defensive minded and they're fine. You know, it's nice to have that little transitional player in there, and I think you're right. Kimmich is the perfect player to do that at this point.
Yeah, if you see your like the opposition charging down through the middle, and you see they're about to go up against Toni Kroos, you think, well, this just isn't going to end well. If you see them going up against Alonso or Schweinsteiger or now even Kimmich, you think they're about to get tackled. If it's a foul, okay, fine. At least they did something. Toni Kroos never struck me as the sort of person that you could base your entire defensive midfield on. Not to say that he's a bad player. I just don't like him.
That really has always been a problem for the German national team, kind of, because we always had players like Toni Kroos and Gündogan and players in that mold, and not so much the defensive players. That's why we stuck with Khedira way too long, and he was past his prime, and that didn't work out, and all of that stuff. We really should not make mistakes like that at the club, I think. And that's why it's really great that we have Joshua Kimmich. He's really a great player in that mold, and I think that's what I was missing. That's why I argued for Javi Martinez at the beginning of the season, because that did not work out. Thiago and Sanchez and that stuff. I think we should not go back to that at all.
And I think you may be right about what you said earlier, or I think you definitely are right that Kimmich and Goretzka, if they're not already, they definitely have the potential to be something special for both club and country. And part of that is because of what Tim was talking about. They both have that just willingness to do whatever it is. And they both have a set of skills that complement each other very, very well. Kimmich is obviously, he's a better passer, but I would say Goretzka is, you know, more of a goal threat. Kimmich can defend better, but Goretzka's faster, he's taller, he's stronger, so he's still got that, he's got physicality over Kimmich. So yeah, I think that combo has potential to become, you know, something huge for Bayern. But another combo that's really been, another pairing, I guess, that's really been excelling over the past few games is Serge Gnabry and Thomas Müller, who have worked together in sort of shifting between, you know, right wing and central attacking midfield roles. They did it again this past weekend. I was really disappointed neither of them got on the score sheet or technically grabbed an assist, because they were both phenomenal, especially Müller. Müller was at his best, I would think, against Nuremberg over the weekend. They make each other better. They make Robert Lewandowski better. And it's going to make it difficult for James Rodriguez, I would say, to break back into this squad once he returns from fitness. So one question we did have on Twitter is, if you were Niko Kovac, which, of course, this is looking ahead, James is unfit until January, but is this something we should be looking to see more often? Should we make this combo something, you know, a priority in attack? And then what does happen for you whenever James returns?
That's a very interesting question, of course. I have to say the goals were a bit strange, I guess, against Nuremberg. The people who scored the goals were not necessarily the players who were most involved. Lewandowski got that one, which was probably not so much his. The same is true for Ribery. But yeah, I liked Müller and Gnabry again, which is probably not news to you. I argued for both of them for a while now, as have a lot of us, I think, excluding Garrett in terms of Thomas Müller. I guess I might add.
Hey, I'm taking the credit for getting him going. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and you should, of course. I think that's something that Kovac needs to work out in the near future. He should basically keep his system in place and try to find spots for those players who are going to be able to play. Where does James fit? Yeah, well, that depends. Maybe he fits on the Müller position. Maybe he's an alternative for the Müller position. Maybe he's an alternative on the outside. That's something I think that's hard to predict, because the system has changed quite a bit since James played the last time. And yeah, I don't think that's something you can decide from an armchair. You just need to see what works. Maybe James, I think my prediction would be he probably could work best as a substitute for Thomas Müller whenever Thomas Müller is not available, or whenever you want to give him a little time for himself, not on the field. I guess that's what I would try here. And yeah, I think Kovac needs to get rotating a bit more again sooner or later anyway. I think the important part really is keeping the system, knowing what are going to do, having certain players on the field who play at least most of the time, and then, yeah, rotate just a little bit. And then we're going to see, I guess.
I don't know. I think that Müller and Gnabry have been phenomenal. And so, like I said, you don't change it until it is a problem, I guess. And it, by all accounts, it doesn't necessarily seem like Bayern are thinking that they're going to keep James around. And maybe this is just a way of saying, well, if he's not going to give you more than what you're getting from Müller and Gnabry, then bye, I guess. I mean, like, because ideally, if you're going to keep him around, you're thinking that he's going to be this game-changing player for you. And he showed some flashes of that at the end of last year, and we just haven't seen enough of him, I guess. But I don't know that anybody's seen enough of him to know that he can be that player. I mean, we've seen it in small spurts, you know, whether it's in the World Cup or, like I said, at the end of the last Bundesliga season. But you just keep going with what's working right now, and until it becomes a problem, I'm not sure I even spend the brain power worrying about it, and just kind of see where you're at. I think, again, we can look at it and say that Müller and Gnabry have been great over the past few games, but we can also look at it and say, yeah, but who have we played? You know, is this going to work against Frankfurt? Is this going to work against RB Leipzig and all that? And hopefully, yeah, hopefully it will. And again, we're in a situation where we have great players that we don't know how to get on the field, and that's actually a pretty good problem to have, because it means that things are going well. But yeah, I don't know that at this point, if it's working, I'd waste the brain power.
Well, I think one thing that is kind of clear is that Robert Lewandowski prefers when Müller is behind him, and he actually said that to Bild after the game yesterday. He said, "It's better for me and for Thomas when he plays behind me. We always have one more player in the box. I have more space and don't always find myself against two or three opponents." And, you know, say what you want about Robin Lewandowski, you want your top goal scorer to be happy, and you want him to feel like, you know, he's not being singled out. So, but Bayern have always kind of, or not always, but in recent years have played best with a second striker, a shadow striker, as opposed to a more traditional number 10. And as much change as Kovac wants to bring, I think he's finding that that still seems to work best, especially when you have, you know, the Rumdeuter himself right behind Robert Lewandowski.
It worked well for him at Frankfurt as well. He'd have, like, he had the choice of three fine strikers, in Sebastian Aller, Luka Jovic, and that man again, Ante Rebic. It's a problem that I think a lot of people like to bring up with a player like Mesut Ozil at Arsenal saying like, oh, like not many teams play with a traditional number 10 anymore as an excuse for him kind of not being the impact player that maybe his wages would suggest that he should be. At the moment, Bayern aren't playing with the 10. They've played like 4-1-4-1 for, I guess, the best part of like a year and a bit now. But in the last few weeks, we've seen them go from, I guess, something that's closer resembling to a 4-4-2 with Müller just behind. So I think if this is the thing that's working, again, going back to the idea of putting players in just for the sake of who they are, whether it's Thiago, Kimmich, Martinez, or James, I think it should be, can this player adapt to the team? Like, this isn't... Okay, it's hard to say James isn't a marquee signing, but James is the quality and level of player that Bayern should be going for anyway. This isn't like, oh, wow, Bayern got James. It kind of is, because Bayern don't really do that sort of thing, but they're in a position where they should be. That shouldn't be out of the, like, completely out of the ordinary. So in my mind, it shouldn't be a matter of, can this person adapt, can this squad adapt to this one player? It should be, can this player find a way into this team? At the moment, it doesn't seem like James as an attacking midfielder makes sense, because it means that you then move Müller out of his natural position. Okay, he didn't get any like scoring points at the weekend, but what he was doing was creating space for everybody. He was doing what he does best. He works for the team. I would like to see James stay. I think he is obviously talented, much like Toni Kroos. I think you can't deny the ability that he has. But I think his future as an attacking midfielder, I think it maybe shouldn't be set in stone. He is Bayern's starting number 10. I think he would probably be best used out wide. He's not the fastest player in the world, but he can still get past a player in the same way that Ribery can get past a player. It's no longer speed, but just being a smart footballer.
Yeah, and on that, I would say one of the most impressive gains from last season was shortly after Heynckes came, and Bayern set up in a 4-2-3-1, and the attacking trio behind Lewandowski was Coman, Müller, and James. And so there's two players that aren't exactly the quickest, and then one who is very quick. And, you know, they destroyed Schalke, and James was kind of the star of the show in that game. So I think there is a way that he can fit into the squad without necessarily pushing Müller out. Now, that may be more difficult now that Serge Gnabry is in and he's doing so well, but that's what happens when you play at a top club like Bayern Munich.
Well, and James should be the type of player that is able to push Serge Gnabry out of a position. Like, Gnabry's been very good this year, but he hasn't been so good that if James is at the top of his game, he shouldn't be able to take his spot. You know what I mean? I mean, they kind of like what Tim said, he's the type of player that if he were at, you know, if a, I don't want to say a lesser club, but not as renowned club as Bayern were to get him, it would immediately be, this is James Rodriguez team. We're building around him. We're getting the players to fit around him to make this all work. But that's at Bayern. He's just another midfielder, which isn't 100% true, but you get the point. And but if he cannot beat out a 22-year-old, is Gnabry 22? 23. If he can't beat him out, where Gnabry's been playing all over the pitch, I mean, essentially kind of a utility type player, with a lot of speed and a lot of good qualities. I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing on Gnabry at this point, but of all the players that James should overtake, it should be Gnabry, and it shouldn't be that difficult for James to do if he's willing to do the type of things that Kovac is wanting him to do. And I don't know, that's the real question for me, is does he want to do that? Does he want to be that player, or does he want to go to a club? I'm blanking on a good example for the type of club that would allow him to do that. Maybe West Ham would do that or something. I don't know. But
I was thinking West Ham as well, strangely.
Hey, see, we're on the same wavelength. But that's the type of, you know, where it's like they're just on the cusp of maybe, you know, becoming a big club. They have a bigger name, that type of thing. But they bigger. But that would be where he could be Almighty James. He wouldn't be, instead of, you know, just another world class player playing for Bayern. But again, like I said, I think that we generate these problems in our heads, like, oh, well, you know, this is working so well. What's going to happen when so-and-so comes back? We'll deal with that when they come back. don't make this such a big problem, you know, now and worry about it. When we have a task at hand, we can't deal with that problem until January. And there's a lot that can happen between now and January. So I hope James can push the level of play up. That'd be great. But as of right now, I'm not going to worry about it too much.
Well, this is Bayern after all, so odds are at least one or two different players will be injured by then.
Probably Coman again.
Oh, God. Please, no. I mean, if he gets injured for half a year again, that might as well be the end of his career or something like that.
And I don't think I mentioned it when we had our little segment last, but, man, he does so many things so well that Bayern doesn't have. Like, he's so fast and good on the ball, and it's so nice to have that type of player in the squad that you can look at and be like, okay, he could really put some pressure on the other team just by being on the pitch. And so it's, please don't get hurt again. I would probably literally cry at this point.
So the Ballon d'Or was announced earlier this week, or at least the winners were announced, with Luka Modric taking home the award, finally breaking up the Messi-Ronaldo duopoly. But the point of, or the talking point here for us, is there were no Bayern Munich players in the top 30 for the award. And I have a couple questions. You know, should that be a cause of concern for Bayern? And or what Bayern player, if any, deserved to be in the top 30?
I guess the Ballon d'Or should never be a cause for any kind of concern for a club.
I think that it is in that people want to see that their club has the best player, and that's like a good or an easy way to say, oh, we have the best players. Look how many people were on the Ballon d'Or list, that type of thing. I'm with you, though. I don't really care, especially with Bayern, because Bayern is supposed to be this team that just works so well together. You know, it's like some sort of machine that just keeps putting in different cogs and it still runs and works, you know, beautiful German engineering sort of thing. And so it doesn't bother me a whole lot, because I don't even know. I mean, I'm trying to think of, I guess it was Ribery or Robin were the last one came close, right?
Manuel Neuer, actually.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
But before him, Ribery.
Yeah. So in whatever, if we're winning trophies, I don't
exactly.
I could care less about who's on the Ballon d'Or list, especially because I think the stat was tweeted out that Lewandowski has more goals over the course of the year than like Messi and Ronaldo and all these other big names and stuff. And I know people don't think he should win the Ballon d'Or. And so it's just, I don't know. Those individual awards, there's so much that goes into them politically and otherwise that I don't care.
No, I completely agree. It's just another way that you can quantify success, but it is otherwise quite a vapid title. I remember on Reddit there was a discussion of, I think when we were signing like Sebastian Rudy on a free a couple of years ago, with people saying like, oh, Bayern needs to be going for like Bale and Eden Hazard and this Mbappe kid that looks quite good. Like, and I remember thinking, yeah, it'd be pretty cool. But ultimately, names don't really win you titles. I mean, look at Real Madrid when they had Ronaldo, Luis Figo, Zidane. They didn't really do that well for the most part. The point that I always kind of went back to was our most important player at that point was Joshua Kimmich. He was picked up for like, what, 10 million from the division below. Just because you have like this individual, I guess, like air about yourself, like somebody. I don't think if Bayern were to sign Messi, all of our problems would be fixed. If anything, that's more problems. It's just a matter of like, what can this team do, regardless of, it's not how much is this team worth, like who's the most expensive player, like who has the most individual trophies. If anything, it's the thing that Lewandowski has been criticized for the most, of being so me. A team that is comprised of individuals that are in it for the betterment of the squad and of the club, in my mind, are always going to do better than the team of 11 people all vying for the Ballon d'Or.
Well, since we're on the topic, I want to hear from you guys, Messi or Ronaldo?
Easily Messi. It's a big part of it is sympathy, but also that Ronaldo, I have never seen him make good game in the national team. I guess I'm even including the last championship in that. Yeah. Messi has also not been brilliant in the national team, but yeah, Ronaldo has been awful like 90% of the time in the national team. I mean, that's just, yeah, he just doesn't play well with actual people, I suppose. I don't know. He just doesn't fit well in an actual team. I don't know. I don't like anything about the guy, really.
People were dying to give him credit for the Euro win,
because
but they played better without him.
Yeah, people who do that know, of course, that he has played awful in the last I don't know how many years even. Remember all those free kicks where he takes, I don't know, a couple of minutes, then stands there, makes his pose for all the pictures and everything, and then he shoots it right on the leg of the first guy, like 15.
And the first guy is Philip Lahm.
And that was not only one shot. You could make a complete YouTube video of that, I suppose. Just national team Cristiano Ronaldo shooting free kicks in the first person on the way, below the knee. Not even a decent shot, even despite that.
Yeah. So, Garrett, I'm guessing you're Team Messi as well.
Tend to be. I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, if I had to choose whether I was watching either of them, it'd be Messi. 100% of the time, I'd rather watch him play. But then again, like, if you're asking me, you know, would you if you could start a team with anybody in the world, I don't think I'd choose either of them, to be honest, because that's kind of part of being a Bayern fan, I think, in some ways, is that you want the top players, but you want the top players that fit well with other top players that, you know, you can. And partially what the problem is with James is that we bought him thinking, you know, and everybody thought, hey, you know, this is the next, maybe Ballon d'Or guy. I mean, he was in, you know, the conversation as an up and coming, you know, star, and it just hasn't materialized. And part of that reason is because the players that tend to win the Ballon d'Or tend to be players that are just phenomenally talented. But unless you have a system that's based around them, it's really hard for them to succeed as a team. Messi, like you said, I mean, they build Barcelona around him, and it's harder. They try to do that with the Argentinian national team, and it doesn't work very well because you just don't get time to work that out. And it's with Ronaldo, his game has changed a little bit over the years, but Modric actually was kind of a breath of fresh air that he won the Ballon d'Or, because he is the kind of player that you feel like you could stick him in almost any team and he'd make it better. And I'm not, I mean, you'd think that about Messi or Ronaldo, but I'm not 100% sure that that's the case.
I was also very much in favor of Modric, I have to say, because people like him, players like him, just had no chance getting any of these awards in the last decade or something like that. It was just about scoring goals, scorer points, and that stuff. And of course, if you're playing a position like Modric plays, you're just not racking up those numbers as the other guys do.
He really paved the way for Joshua Kimmich to win it within the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, Messi or Ronaldo? Just got to get that take.
The hottest take in the world. Okay. Uh-huh. I actually, following on from what Garrett says, the idea of putting one of them in a bad team and it instantly becoming better, there was a debate on Reddit between, would you rather have Mesut Ozil or Christian Eriksen in your team? And the person that had like the highest vote, that had the most votes for their comment, was saying, if the team is already very good, I want Mesut Ozil on my team. If the team needs like just that little something because they're just on the cusp of it, somebody like Christian Eriksen. I think that's exactly the same principle with Ronaldo and Messi. If you're in a team that's kind of struggling to like really break into it, somebody like Ronaldo, who has that really big game mentality and will just kind of like switch on and do it for himself, in my mind, you'd put him in there. I think the fact that Messi works so well with the players around him, I think he would also need better players with him. But I'd say Messi probably has like the most natural talent. I see that this is divided opinion.
I'm cracking up at Sebastian's faces. That's what I'm just dying.
I think me and Sebastian both thought you were going to say the opposite, that Messi's the better for the worst team. Yeah. I thought Messi would be your Christian Eriksen.
Because if Ronaldo plays an awful or not so very good team, he's going to get frustrated after 5 minutes. He's going to shout at the other players. He's going to shoot a free kick from 50 meters away, try to shoot it on the goal because he's not thinking that any of the other guys will give him the ball in a better position and stuff like that.
I think for me, awesome. And if I can kind of, I'm going to try to defend your position, Tim, and I don't know if maybe you disagree with me, and you know, but I do think that Ronaldo at least, you know, is enough of a pure goal scorer to where you could kind of just lump the ball into him and expect him to get, you know, 30 goals, you know, if you're playing. And so in that regard, like, I think but Messi, I feel like, is so hard for bad players to play with because he does so many things just naturally that if you're not used to playing with him, it becomes very easy to just stand and watch him go. And instead of, you know, knowing kind of where his mindset might be taking him into on the pitch, and you can kind of move to an area where he's vacating or whatever. I could see how if you're a bad team with you're just trying to sell tickets and get some goals, and Ronaldo's the guy. But I do think that it takes a certain type of player to play with Messi and do it successfully. That I don't know that. I mean, obviously, you stick Messi in the MLS, he's going to score 1,000 goals and whatever. But I think in this scenario, I tend to agree with Tim on that.
He would have much more patience with the other players, though.
I don't know, though, because it seems like he just kind of... And this, I say this as a much bigger Messi fan than Ronaldo, but like he kind of seems like he quits on games at times.
Yeah.
When it seems like, you know, with Argentina, when things were getting really bad, I mean, he missed that penalty in the Copa America and retired after it and then came back. And, you know, it's like, I think that they're both the type of player. I think he's quieter than Messi or than Ronaldo, and he's not as much of a pretty boy as Ronaldo, but he will definitely, you know, he's prone to pouting from time to time. So I am Team Messi if I've got to choose one side or the other, but they're not, it's not like one's an angel and one's the devil, but
no.
But they both have their pluses and minuses. I think more pluses for Messi, but
I think I always have to look at the mentality of a player. And Garrett, as you said, like Messi has quit international football at least once. He might have done it twice. I can't remember. And seeing how he is with Argentina now, where there's like he's the captain, but I think he's just kind of captain by name only. I think he doesn't have that same sort of presence that Ronaldo does. As Sebastian, I think you said, when you saw him at the Euros, he was better off the pitch. I cannot picture Messi on the sidelines, like screaming at people, telling them what to do. That's the difference maker that I want to see in this bad team. Because if you have a bad team, Messi's going to be like, well, what am I supposed to do here? If you have a bad team, Ronaldo will be like, I know what to do. Give it to me and I'll do the hard work.
Sam,
which is strange because I don't like selfish players.
You've taken the question and made it a whole entire hypothetical about this bad team.
Yeah, I've never been.
Messi or Ronaldo played for West Ham. We're going to continue to get West Ham in here.
Oh, gosh.
Who would make that? No, I just wanted to plug that.
I didn't mean to open that can of worms, but there is only one right answer, and that is Leo Messi. Anyway, Hasan Salihamidžić.
And Kostin Janka.
Yeah, and Kostin
Janka. Forget Kostin Janka.
Hasan Salihamidžić shared some interesting quotes after Saturday's game against Nuremberg. First one I want to address is he basically confirmed Bayern's interest in Ajax midfielder Frenkie de Jong. Reports really surfaced earlier this week from Sport Bild linking Bayern with a move for de Jong and his teammate Matthias de Ligt, who we talked about last week, who Bayern have been linked with often in the past. But he said that it'd be a shame if de Jong went to PSG for the rumored, I think, 75 million or so, and kind of confirmed that he'd been watching him for a long time. Now, according to Sport Bild, Bayern are supposedly interested in paying 150 million for both de Ligt and de Jong. And I know I've asked this question in the chat, but would you be okay with Bayern spending that 150 million euros on those two young Ajax players?
For me, it's kind of too much of a price tag. Are we sure that we really need De Jong? I mean, we probably can sell some central midfielders when and if we sign him, but I'm not sure if I want De Jong. I would love De Ligt. Yeah, okay. I would also be fine with, I don't know, paying 60, 70 million for him, but playing over 70 million for him and about the same also for De Jong, who we probably do not need. I don't think so. I think there are better options out there. Because if we pay that amount of money, how many players are we going to get beside that? Not so many, I fear.
And I guess, are they going to slot right into the team, do you think? Or are they going to be a player that get groomed for another year before they... And that kind of makes a difference for me, too. If I'm going to pay $150 million for two players, I want them to come right in and make a difference from the word go. And I don't know that... Well, I know that wouldn't happen with De Jong because there's enough midfielders that, you know, play his position that are, I think, are plenty better than him. But with De Ligt, I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess I haven't seen him play enough to really feel strongly about him. But I'm kind of with you, Sebastian. I think that's a lot of money to pay for a 19-year-old. And things happen with young players, and I don't know. I mean, you look at Ousmane Dembele, hasn't really taken off like people thought he would, and you know, just that might be just a function of the situation that he's put himself in. But again, you pay a lot of money for a young player that does do some things in their heads, potentially, depending on the type of kid, I guess. But yeah, I would like hate the move, but I think if I were the one with the making the call, I don't think I would pull the trigger.
Well, I have to say, I don't think Bayern need De Jong at all, especially with how well Kimmich has been doing since coming back to midfield. And I find it really worrying that Salihamidzic thought that it'd be a good idea to go public that Bayern are definitely interested in him, or to like really say that, you know, this is a player that I've been watching for a long time. It just really seemed unnecessary for me. And then it's, you know, it doesn't look good for Bayern when we don't sign that player. I'm not sure.
Do you think he's trying to like drive up the price and make PSG pay more?
Well, it's more than maybe. Me. I would say seems like, which we're about to get some more quotes from him in a second, but it kind of seems like he's trying to just prove that he's doing his job, basically, or that, you know,
he wants to be in the news. Yeah. He wants to be
recognized. I do something.
It's like, I also know that this player is very good and I want to sign him. So,
a kid I heard about called Mbappe, I believe, and I've been scouting him for a few years and determined he's pretty decent.
Yeah, I've been scouting him, watching Champions League on TV.
Potential on FIFA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then I think it was either earlier today or late yesterday, Salihamidzic said this. He said, "In my work at Bayern so far, I've already moved things forward more than my predecessors in their entire tenure," which is a very, very bold statement. It may be translated a little bit weird, but
no,
that's it. That's it.
Yeah, and it's a very strange quote. I find it, because who are those predecessors? Who's he talking about? Matthias Sammer, Christian Nierlinger? Is he also talking about Uli Hoeneß? If so, he's out of his mind. But if not, why would he I mean, he could only really compare himself to Matthias Sammer. And maybe Christian Nierlinger, because those are the only guys who really had that job he's having, more or less.
Well, even so, I don't think Brazo wants us to really compare him to Matthias Sammer.
No. I think he can only... The argument could be made that he's better than Christian Nierlinger. I'm fine with that.
Is this going to be the thing that they have to come out and apologize for? Because we haven't had an apology
for
a little
G1,
while.
Aren't we?
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe
it's been a little while. But no, I don't know what that is. That's just strange to go from not hearing anything out of him and not really being sure what exactly it is he's doing to now all of a sudden we're having this discussion about he believes he's done more for the club than anybody before him, or at least the person most recent before him. It's just strange, and I don't know if this is just they finally took the muzzle off and this is who he's been the whole time or what, but it's just weird.
I don't know, this whole like I've made big changes. I think last year or towards the end of last season, I would actually have kind of agreed with him to a small, very, very small extent, because all of a sudden we were getting all of these announcements of Meriton Shabani has been offered a professional contract, Batista Meyer has been offered a professional contract, Frank Avina, we were getting all of these youth players, and you think, wow, Salihamidzic is making waves. But then having seen nothing of any of these players, you kind of think, oh, these waves were not real waves. I think he has clearly started something.
Yeah.
And then it's just dissipated.
And maybe it's one of those things where, like, if you were to, you know, get a house and you do work on the foundation, that's a huge improvement to the house. And maybe people just don't see it. Maybe that's kind of the thing he's referring to. You know, we've got this foundation of a youth program, that's the academy is getting stronger, and I've done a lot of that. So maybe that's kind of the thing that he's talking about, and he's thinking we won't see the results of that right away or what, but I don't know. I think you could probably make that same argument for what Klinsmann did, you know, in his mind anyway, you know, where he's like, you know, I set this precedent and, you know, it worked for me coming in. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think, that could potentially be something that he's kind of talking about. And in the case of, you know, just be patient, you're going to see some phenomenal things to come. I don't know.
Well, I do like Salihamidzic, and I'm all for giving him the benefit of the doubt and giving him a little bit of time to see, you know, if this is true. But I also feel like if he was making that much progress at the club, if he was doing what he says he, you know, is doing, he wouldn't have to come out and make statements like that and say that, you know, I've done so much more than my predecessors. Because I think if that were true, we probably would be seeing the results of that, or at least starting to see the results of that.
I think it's really tough because it's not so very clearly delineated what's his job and where Uli Hoeneß' job begins, what responsibilities is he really taking on, how much is he involved with scouting, how much is he involved with the contracts. I think it's not all perfectly clear, and a lot of these things, I mean, he can sign as many good players as he wants. If Kovac is not playing them, it's tough to say if that's his fault, really. I would really not... I'm not in the position to really criticize any of his decisions, because either they haven't had a chance to really pay off, or we don't even know if it were his decisions. Mm-hmm. So what I can say is that in terms of working with the media, he has not been as successful as Matthias Sammer. But maybe that's not even his job. Maybe his job description that we don't exactly know is not so much doing what Matthias Sammer did, but really doing working more in the background and talking to players, scouting and all that. So I think it's really tough. It's really tough to decide if he's doing a good job, not such a good job, and especially how that compares to the other guys, because it's not at all set in stone that they have the same job description, their duties are exactly the same.
Well, one thing's for sure, he doesn't want to have someone between him and Uli Hoeneß, because he was talking, someone asked him about Oliver Kahn, and you know his response was that he would love to work with Kahn, but only when he takes over from Rummenigge as the chairman. He doesn't want Kahn to come in as that general manager or kind of the middleman between him and the president. We talked so much a couple weeks ago about bringing back that role, and Bayern have already said that's not going to be the case. So it's just a little bit more confirmation of that.
I find that really strange. I mean, why does it even concern him if Uli Hoeneß should decide to basically cut his own job in half and say, all right, I'm only going to be the president for one or two more years and some other guy is going to be the general manager? Why is that a problem for him? That's what I don't really get. I mean, I can perfectly understand that he doesn't want somebody taking part of his job from him. I can understand that perfectly. But I guess Uli Hoeneß' job to be cut in two halves, why is that his problem? Why does he even think about that? Why would that be a problem for him? That's what I did not perfectly get here. I guess we should maybe mention that makes it even more clear that, yeah, Oliver Kahn is probably not going to be any kind of general manager at all. He's not going to take Uli Hoeneß' place completely. I think he's not going to be president and general manager, even if Salihamidzic would probably like that better. Yeah, it's getting complicated because, okay, Rummenigge is going to do one more term, maybe, probably. Hoeneß has kind of his timetable when he's going to leave. There are so many things that seem more or less fixed by now that it's going to be, more and more complicated to really work other people into that, to make that work with other people's plans. And that's what I fear right now, I have to say.
Well, what I find weirdest about this whole situation is that it was Uli Hoeneß hinting that his presidency would come to an end fairly soon. That kind of started everything. Mm-hmm. And then so Oliver Kahn gets talked up. And then Hoeneß comes out and says, oh, no, he's not taking my place. That's, you know, he's going to work, take over from Rummenigge. And so we're still kind of stuck with the whole situation of who's Bayern's next president going to be, or what happens after Hoeneß. Because I'm assuming he still wants to bring his tenure to an end fairly soon. I don't know.
Especially if the members are going to make him so worked up. That whole situation was weird in and of itself. It's reading about, he just seems so out of touch with what was going on around him with that. And then, like you said, he was going to be gone possibly by the end of the season, and, you know, who's going to take his spot? And then it was, no, it sounds like actually it's Rummenigge who's going to be the one leaving soon. And I don't know, it's just probably best to not even think about it. But what else would we talk about?
It's tough, really. I mean, it would be ideal to work the new guys in one at a time, to really say, okay, one of the guys is leaving, we're going to get his replacement, and once that's settled for a year or two, we're going to replace the other guy. I think that would be usually what you would want in a situation like this. But now it's all getting complicated. There are so many ifs, and there are so many things to think about. It's just overly complicated right now, and that doesn't help. That's going to be a huge mess if they are not very careful here.
Do you think that it's possible that Salihamidžić might end up with more power?
He's doing a great job.
What was that face, Tim?
I don't know. It's a matter of like.
I mean, like in terms of
power, like does he A, deserve it, or B,
no,
yeah, but obviously he's going to have more power because he has none in the first place. I don't know what's going on.
But I just wonder, like, if as far as like the, I mean, it seems like you could deal with a little bit more a abrupt change to the positions that Rummenigge and Hoeneß have if you have somebody who is way more involved on the actual on the pitch product. So I don't know, that's kind of just a thought.
Well, I guess the natural progression would be up to general manager and then up to president possibly, and that could explain. I mean, I know that's thinking very long term.
I think he's too young for president.
Right.
We're playing just 40 chess at this point.
I can see him as a general manager if he's continuing to do a good job, or if he's doing a great job, more or less. Yeah, why not? But we still need a president then, at least. I cannot see him as the new president. I don't think that fits. He's too young for that, for one thing. He's not big enough of a name for that, I guess. That would be strange. I cannot see that right now.
Depending on how long it takes, maybe Lahm comes back. Mm-hmm.
If he's not, it just depends on what he's doing with Germany.
If he's not too involved with Germany. But I guess with Philipp Lahm, I don't know. I guess not being over in Germany and everything, maybe that's a bigger deal to him as Germany than Bayern. But it just feels weird to not have him be a part of the club in some regard. Even if it's some small thing, there's a spot open. They just got, since he pushed Breitner out, then we there's a spot up in the press box or whatever. It's in the owner's box.
Bayern now have 4 games left before the winter break. Ajax away midweek in the Champions League, followed by Hanover away at the end of the week. RB Leipzig at home midweek next week, and then Eintracht Frankfurt away to round out the first half of the Bundesliga season. That's not exactly an easy bunch of games to head into the winter break with. So, if you're Niko Kovac, what are you expecting or what are you hoping for out of these last 4 matches?
I think you got to hope that you don't fall too much further behind Dortmund. I mean, I think that it's reasonable to expect at least a draw in those final two games, which I think is going to be a huge deal. I don't know that your Bundesliga title hopes can handle two draws, but as far as a successful four-game stretch, if we just looked at that in and of itself, I think that Kovac should at least get that. And I mean, you should beat Hanover, and at least you should beat Ajax. That I don't think it's too much to ask Bayern to beat Ajax. But I don't know. I look at Frankfurt and RB Leipzig, and I think those could be really tough and really big blows to Bayern's title chances. Although they both looked kind of poor over the weekend, and which works in Bayern's favor as well. And but again, you have to do a little bit of scoreboard watching too. I mean, if Dortmund lose, you have to take advantage of it. And especially that last week, because I think we talked about that before, that Dortmund is playing Gladbach, and that could be huge for Bayern's health in the race. So, I think that you can't lose any of these four matches, certainly. And I would even say that drawing any of them is a pretty tough pill to swallow. But I think, reasonably speaking, just not losing would be a small victory in and of itself. And maybe that's bad that my expectations are that low, but we are where we're at, so...
I guess the most important thing for me is we need to build on what we have seen. Now, there are two games. The next two games are the easier ones, I guess. I mean, not to underestimate Ajax, but I think the next two are easier, especially Hanover, of course. We really need to build more momentum, need to build up on what already works, get even better, maybe find solutions to make the things work that don't perfectly work yet. As I said, I'm not perfectly happy with Ribery on the left side. He has scored a goal in the last match, but I don't think he played so great. I would love to see Coman, for example, on that side once we play Frankfurt and Leipzig. I would like to see Rafinha maybe improve, at least find even better ways to make Rafinha not be a problem. Also, I would like substitutions to make more of an impact, which they really haven't in the last couple of games. There's really we have a lot to build on, and we can still get much better. We can improve, and we can build up some momentum. And then I guess there's a reasonable chance Bayern can win those last two games too. Why not? Since, as I think Garrett pointed out, Leipzig and Frankfurt really haven't looked so hot this weekend. They are not perfect. They are perfectly beatable, I would say. Why not? We are still Bayern München. I mean...
Well, and of course, we've already played Frankfurt once this year, and we saw how that went. Of course, they were just under a new coach and everything, but, I mean, Niko Kovac knows that team. He knows those guys, so you'd really expect something, a good result there. I think... The biggest thing for me is, you know, whether or not Dortmund are going to drop points. And I think if Dortmund drop points, Bayern have to pounce on that. They have to be ready, because if we can drop it to 7 or even like 6-point gap between or over the or heading into the winter break, I think that'd be huge, because you come back second half of the season and, you know, two match days can completely, you know, flip the table and Bayern are back on top. So that's what I'd be hoping for. I would agree. I don't even think a draw might be acceptable against, I don't even know who, maybe against Ajax, because a draw would keep us on top in the league. But the Bundesliga games, it's got to be 3 wins. And Sebastian, you kind of talked about this a little bit in your answer, but one of my next questions was going to be, does Niko Kovac rotate his squad going into these next few matches, or does he stick with the same starting 11?
Yeah, as you can imagine, I guess, I hope he does. Not too much and not too little, on the other hand. As I said, I would like Ribéry to play less, not necessarily for rotation's sake, but in general. But also, I think, yeah, we need to find out who works in the system we are playing right now. I think Niko Kovac has established a system that's good, that works. And yeah, the other players also need their time in that system. I would keep the more important players in. I would just, yeah, swap one or two out each week. I would slowly begin to rotate just a little bit. I think that should not hurt, and it's important because we need a working plan B. We need other players to be able to pick up where the others left off, because that's how a season in European football on that level works. There are just so many games. There are so many injuries. We cannot just rely on 11 players plus two or three of even the same substitutions, because even substitutions have been kind of the same in the last game. So,
yeah, four games in the space of 2 weeks, you can't be playing the same 11 for 90 minutes all four games. So I think something has to be switched up. I would agree.
But
there.
I think max two changes to the starting 11, you know, barring any injuries. But I think rotating a couple guys in rather than rotating four, you know, three to four guys in, I think that would throw things off again. I mean, it's this delicate balance that you have. And so I think that if you're going to do some rotation, I think you do it in the Ajax game and against Hanover rather than in the later two, for obvious reasons. I know we look at those two matches as kind of being the bigger task, I guess. So get some rotation in those other two matches without changing up so much that by the time you come back to this lineup that's been working, it's been thrown off enough. So yeah, I would kind of agree. Let's rotate just a couple guys.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that as well. I think now that Koeman is coming back and he's having watched him, I don't think he is quite at 100% yet. You can see that he's got the right attitude and the right idea of what he wants to do. So I think against Ajax, that's probably going to be the best time for him to maybe start. But again, I don't think... The last couple of matches from Ribéry have been quite good. Then again, that is comparing it to the rest of the season, which has been not as good. I think we've all kind of touched on it. This is going to have to be a matter of capitalise on Dortmund's potential pitfalls. So they're playing Monaco next. That's a win. I think that's a guaranteed win. Monaco have been really quite awful this season. Poor Thierry Henry. I feel I could potentially drop points against Bremen. Unlikely to drop against Düsseldorf. Gladbach is going to be the biggest game, though. I think that's going to be... That could be like a season-deciding game, because if they can get points against Gladbach, then... You know, I was kind of hoping that Gladbach were going to lose today. And then Mario Gomez did his best to ensure that Bayern fail once more. Thank you, Mario. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. I think Bayern could get a good result against Ajax. I think Hanover, that shouldn't be a problem. I don't think we're going to see what happened against Dusseldorf again. They've got a much better attitude now, as we've seen against Benfica. Okay, a weak team, let's show that we are stronger rather than just relying on reputation. Leipzig is another one that could go either way. Leipzig and Frankfurt, I think, are going to be the big challenges. This is going to be really difficult, and I can't call it, but I'd like to see some rotation. maybe play Renato Sanchez against Ajax. Potentially, he's done quite well when called upon, maybe in place of Goretzka.
I would think, yeah, if you're going to rotate, Ajax has to be the match when you're going to do it, because it's, like I said, it's the one game where a draw is the most acceptable, because if we draw Ajax, we're still top of the group, and we avoid so many other teams in the Champions League. I think, but you also don't want to go so far and risk, you know, losing that match and ending up in pot two of the Champions League. Although that might end up working in our favor, I don't want to risk that.
It did last year. Yeah, it worked out really
nice. Exactly. It worked out last year, but maybe we've spent all our luck, considering how kind of not difficult our group was this year. I wouldn't
and risk and how unlucky we've been. How unlucky we've been this year. Yeah. We don't really have a whole lot of luck to draw from, I don't think.
I guess the danger with drawing against Ajax is that it might break our momentum. It might break our confidence again before we really properly get it up. So that's what I fear. If we draw against Ajax, maybe we also draw against Hanover. I think that would be very possible. This trend is not so strong that I would say, yeah, it will just be up to normal again. We will just easily beat Hanover if we only draw against Ajax. So I guess that's my problem here.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think we've all kind of hinted at it, but the best thing is, if you're going to rotate, it has to be, you know, small increments, a couple players at a time. It can't be any wholesale changes to the squad. You can't, you know, stick with what's working for you right now. Those key players like Gnabry and Muller, how they're working together. Maybe shift the midfield a little bit, but I don't know. I kind of think I'd stick with Kimmich and Goretzka as much as I possibly can, at least as starters, and maybe take them off early or something.
Yeah, and I think that you probably, I mean, if Robin gets fit, that's probably the change that you make. You put him in instead of Ribery, and you know, you can move Gnabry to the other side if you want, or whatever. But yeah, I don't know how many other changes I would make, as far as players that I think are important enough to rest, but not important enough to throw off the balance of what's working. Maybe Lewandowski, but I don't know where else your goals are coming from at this point. So, which is a worry, but that's a worry for another time. I think that Bayern are in a pretty decent spot considering where we've been over the past few weeks. So, there needs to be some tinkering with an eye to, you know, this stretch of matches is going to be pretty close together, but you can't throw everything at all four teams and then end up with more injuries and tired legs and all that, and then ruin the rest of your season too, because it's already teetering.
Well, starting with the Ajax game midweek, we'll at least get a look at Matthias de Ligt and Frenkie de Jong, kind of see what they can offer, possibly offer Bayern Munich should they join. So be on the lookout for that, but be on the lookout for us again next weekend, because this is all the time that we've got for today. Follow us on Twitter at Super Bayern Pod. Shoot us some questions. We like to take them. We like to answer them. Email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com. You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, you know, whatever podcast catcher you might use. If you've enjoyed us, as always, please leave a rating, a like, tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll talk to you next week.